Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Sempre Milan podcast. I'm your host, Ollie Fisher, joined once again by Anthony Torgrud.
What's up, guys? Normally I say glad to be back. I'm not. It's cold. It's 6 in the morning, but I'm here.
And Maddie's here again.
Yeah, I'm here, sleepy and all, so I'm excited to...
Yeah, your hair looks like it.
All right, somebody got a new job and we can't record at our normal time, so I'm forced to wake up early now. Yeah.
Don't ever say we're not dedicated, right?
If you want to know how early it is...
I take my volunteer work very seriously.
Good man. Always a charitable individual, eh? If you want to know how early it is that we're recording this, it's still morning over here in London, United Kingdom. So that says that it is 6:13 a.m. in the United States of America, I believe, Eastern Time. So yeah, don't ever doubt our dedication. Speaking of dedicated followers, Milan fans, whatever, our Substack founding members, Des Winter, McGlynn, Ali, Tareen, Tito, Mac, Moritz, Paulman, Joey Gawler, Kemin, MJ, Mats, Luke Villano, and Raul Escobar. Thank you guys, of course, as always, for your support. Be sure to check out what we're doing on the Substack if you haven't done already. We've got interviews, features, of course, the bonus podcast, of which there will be another this week after we did two last week. So yeah, plenty of good content going on over there, and you can try a week for free just to see how the average 7-day cycle looks. Let's dive in then, boys. Bit of a tale of two games for this one. And we begin with, unfortunately, the negative note of the episode, which is the Coppa Italia game against Atalanta. Now, all of us in the preview predicted that we would win this and that we would go through to the semi-finals where, as it was, either Fiorentina or Bologna would await. Fiorentina won on penalties. We bottled it, basically. I don't know what else to say. I'll tell you something, though, before we go into looking at this game in particular and the incidents that happened and stuff like that, the anger that I feel about this result far outweighs the joy that I felt when we beat Roma. You know, maybe that's the way it should be, because this was a knockout game and we saw a realistic trophy target fall by the wayside again. But I was so pissed off after this game. Thoughts?
I think because the bracket was lining up for a run, mm-hmm. right? Like Juve and Inter are out.
Napoli and Inter. Juve is still in, but yeah.
It's like, all right, this could be our year, you know? Mm-hmm. And then we peeled it.
Yeah, I mean, the path to the final was so simple, right? You get past Atalanta and then Fiorentina in a semifinal, okay? You know, and then either... Lazio or Juve, likely it's Juve, and the boys are always up for that match. So you really felt like there was a good opportunity here to get some silverware in a season that likely won't have any. Like you said, we bottled it. I don't know if I'd say we bottled it so much as we were robbed, to be honest with you, given the penalty situations. You know, I don't feel... Watching the game live, I thought the ref got the correct decision on all the calls. I'll just come out and say that. Having seen it back with, you know, the extra angles they always magically get after VAR can no longer be used, Jimenez definitely got a touch on the ball. It wasn't a penalty for Atalanta, so that never should have happened. And then the one in the end was a penalty. It did hit his arm. He's got it chicken winged out. You know, you could say it's tucked, but at the end of the day, no arm is naturally bent like that, you know? This is natural, whether it's there. But this is not. So I don't know what it was other than Dembele and Valeri doing the things that they do. And it's crazy because at halftime, they should have been able to see that the one they gave Roma was incorrect, right? And then you would take that into consideration for ours, whether they were unsure or not, and say, here's a makeup call. You deserve it. And then it goes to extra time and it's, you know, may the best win, but
yeah,
that's not what happened. And then, then the referee looked at either the fans or the players and said, "Fucking go home" or something like that. Like,
yeah, and that's a Casa, go back home. Which I mean, I think he said it to the players who were probably hurling a lot of abuse at him at that moment. That is as they should be. They're fired up, like they thought it was genuinely a very good penalty shout. And yeah, DiBello again, even Gasperini, who was on the winning end of the game, complained afterwards and said he's disrespectful and he's arrogant, because he clearly said something to him when he got sent off in the first half for complaining about something. So yeah, I think he's not a very well-liked man. He looks like a dickhead as well. You know, like, he's just got that dickhead haircut and the way he carries himself. He's one of those self-important referees, kind of like we have Mike Dean over here. You know, he wants to be the center of the show. But yeah, I totally agree with you. I think at first we all presumed with that. In fact, Leao goal, we'll talk about that first. Lovely finish. But, you know, that was a nice goal, and that really should have put us in the driving seat.
Yeah, the irony of that and knowing how the game ended is after that went in, I was in the office watching with everyone else, and we all jumped, fist pumped, screaming, like, that was an incredible goal. One of the best from Leao, and one of the best that we've scored in a while, until the next game, you know.
Until tail.
Yeah. But right after that, you know, there was like a good 45 seconds between our goal and their goal, their first one. And during that very, very brief moment of victory there, I looked at the guy next to me and I said, no team comes back from conceding a goal like that. It didn't take long.
Brother, they did. They did. Yeah. But like, this is what
you kept your job after saying that.
Insider trading type shit, match fixing. This is what pisses me off the most about how the game ended up going, right? So the best time to score a goal, especially one to put you in front, is before halftime, because the other team, in theory, shouldn't have much time to get back into the game. You're going in, spirits are up, boys are flying around the dressing room, you know, and then you come out and you found a bit of extra energy from somewhere to hopefully go on and seal the win from there. We were in a fantastic position. That goal was a lovely bit of quality we've been asking for from Leao for weeks now. Carried it on after that goal against Cagliari in the Coppa. We're 1-0 up, home crowd loving it. And yeah, we didn't even last, as you said, it was like a minute from kickoff. And it was, I think what was so worrying about it is the lapse in concentration. I mean, they always say that the most dangerous period in football is when you've just scored a goal, because it's hard to switch back on from all the emotion and everything. And that proved to be the case, because Koopmeijer has had the freedom of Milan on the edge of the box to fire what was a pretty good shot. And Koopmeijer was absolutely the best player on the field for me. Like, he looked fantastic and well up for it. But you just can't let that happen. You get to halftime by any means necessary, a goal up, and then the game is in your command, and you see it out from there. That to me was kind of like symbolic of what was to come in the second half. It was a big, I don't know, physiological, psychological drop-off in the second half, as we've seen quite regularly this season. You know, we've thrown away leads against Napoli and against Lecce. We've thrown away, we nearly threw it away against Roma, but we'll come on to that. And then there was like the Empoli game where we were 2-0 up, and they kind of got back into it. They put us under serious pressure before the hour mark, and Maignan had to make a couple of saves. Like, we just seemed to drop off so wildly in the second half. And dare I say it, penalty incidents aside, on the balance of play, they probably deserved it. Like, we just were non-existent in that second half. And the tactical approach after we conceded that penalty was seemingly just lump the ball into the box. And we did it with two strikers on the field. And either the cross didn't beat the first man, or it went over the head of everybody. There was zero quality. There was zero plan. We weren't looking to break them down with passing. It really was just a case of, try and force a goal by any means necessary. And I think it showed that our composure had totally gone, and almost that we'd accepted the result, you know?
Yeah, I mean, none of the stats are in our favor. I'm just looking at it now. The only thing that we had better of were duels, and it was like splitting hairs, 51% to 49%, you know. But every defensive stat, they had better. Every XG type of stat, we had better. They had better, but much better. We had 0.5 to their 1.4. Their open play was even higher than us, and they won it off a penalty, which is nuts. They had more shots. We had the same amount on target, but they had more inside the box. Nothing was for us.
The thing is as well that we sort of mentioned in the preview that we were playing before Atalanta did the weekend prior, and Atalanta were playing Roma on the Sunday night. So not only did they have less rest, but they had a massive game against a team that were around them at the time as well. And that ended up being a 1-1 draw, if memory serves. So it was a bit of a battle for them. And yet, they found this other gear in the second half, despite having so many injured players. You know, they played CDK up front, and they had a little bit of an improvised defence. They just found something from somewhere that we couldn't. And we really needed to win that game. Like, we really needed to win it. And this is like, it brings me on to something that I wrote on Friday, which you can find on the features bit of the website. But like, it's Pioli's tenure symbolized. We're now heading towards one trophy in 5 years under his leadership. Of course, we all have the memories of the one trophy that he did win for us, and that they'll never leave. He deserves so much credit for that, of course. But we are heading to a position now where he's going to be remembered more for the games that he lost than the ones that he won, and for what he didn't achieve versus what he did achieve. You know, it's another game that's sort of a crossroads where we're looking at it thinking, we can still rescue this season, top four, Coppa Italia win, maybe Europa League deep run / win that if something freaky happens with Liverpool, for example. And then you can look at the season as a success, and yet we're looking at another trophyless failure. And it's all because we didn't show up on a night when we needed to.
Yeah, but a part of that is comes down to him, though, like being mentally exactly. prepared, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah, fully.
Yeah, I was just going to say that that's not abnormal for Milan. One trophy in 5 years.
It should be, though, right? Like, we should have higher standards.
No, I completely agree. But you look at the previous 5 years to before Pioli, we just had the Super Cup. And then before that, we just had the one Scudetto in 2011. Like, yeah, I don't know. It just, well, you know what? I think that 5 year span probably would include the 07 Champions League also. But still, what the point is, we don't, for a team that has so many trophies, we really don't win them that often somehow. I don't.
No, an Inter, like, as I've repeated so many times on this podcast, the least we can aspire to be is the best team in the city, right? And Inter are closing that gap on trophies. Like, it was about 12, it's now about 8. You know, and the way they're going, they're maybe going to win a couple this season, and we're going to emerge with nothing. It's like, if you needed anything to back the Pioli out agenda, and I'm not saying that we sack him now or anything like that, I think he probably gets the rest of the season, but you take your you take stock at the end of the season, which is what Cardinale is going to do. And he's going to look at it and say, that's not a good enough return. You know, you had over 100 million. Okay, Tonali was sold, but you still had over 100 million to play within the summer. You brought in these players. We lost the biggest games. We didn't get through the Champions League group stages. You got knocked out in the second game in the cup after you got knocked out in the first game of the cup last season against 10 men. Like, it's not good enough. You know, the players definitely need to shoulder some of the responsibility, 100%. But, like, why did he decide to play 3-4-3 randomly in this game with Jimenez down as a wing-back but ending up playing more as a left centre-back so Teo could go on these adventures down the left side, and him playing too close to the penalty area? Jimenez is going to be fine against Cagliari and coming on against Empoli and stuff like that, but you put actual quality opposition against him, he's going to make a mistake, and it is going to cost you a game. So you need to create the right circumstances and the right, I don't know, you need to have the right tactical approach to nullify the chances of that happening. I was almost as angry as the Derby loss, the 5-1 after this, because it's like, this can't happen. Everything was in our hands, and yet we let it slip through again. And it kind of ruined, because you mentioned in the preview about not bookending a good run of form with Atalanta losses. And it happened. Like, come on. So where have we really come? You know, we've beaten opponents that we should beat in between, and now we're back to losing a game like that. And obviously we're going to come on to a win against Roma, but Roma are in crisis as well, so it didn't really teach us anything.
What is Pioli's record against Atalanta? I mean, off the top of my head, I can think of three big losses, right? I can think of two wins. I can think of, you know, these two losses this season, and obviously the 5-0 that brought in Zlatan. And then I could think of the win in the Scudetto season. There was a win when Inter won the Scudetto. but that seems to be off the top of my head.
So his personal record as a manager in general against Atalanta is 12 wins in 30 games, but that obviously includes all of the games that he's managed. Yeah, but if I just look down here, this is the list of his results since he's been with us. The 5-0 loss, 1-1 draw, 3-0 loss at home. In fairness to him, that was when we had no players at all and we were playing like Calabria at centre-back and stuff. Then we won 2-0 away to clinch Champions League. We won 3-2 in the Scudetto season away from home. We won 2-0 and that set us up for the Sassuolo game. Then a 1-1 draw, 2-0 win, 3-2 loss, 2-1 loss most recently. So it's mixed.
Back and forth. I think in big games like this, though, Pioli's not confident in his tactics, so he always matches the opponent's lineup. Formation. Because he thinks that's the best way to beat them. But that's not true at all.
Yeah, and we had something good going, or at least I thought that we'd sort of found something again with having a back four, round pegs in round holes, not trying to force it too much, playing players out of position. And then if you're really scared about what they can bring down the middle, because they do have a lot of central players that cause danger, then you play a three in midfield rather than having Loftus-Cheek further up. Like, there are simple tweaks that you can make. But ultimately, we're at home. We're 9 points above them on the table. We are the better team than them. There should be fire in your belly because you lost 3-2 in the last minute, like a month ago. There is no excuse for losing that game, I'm afraid. And I'm not going to make one. I'm not going to sit here and pretend like I see the silver lining to it. You know, the penalty things didn't go our way. I was fucking furious. Shall we move on? Tops and flops.
I was ready to go to Roma. I mean, tops Liao, I guess. He got a goal. It was a great goal. And that's the only good memory of the game that I have.
Mm-hmm. Same. Agreed, Manny, yeah. I'm just going to cheat here and look at the ratings, but I think the flop that I'm going to pick is Jimenez because he struggled defensively and obviously gave away the penalty. Now, I think, as we kind of mentioned, that it was a harsh penalty, but he struggled generally. He gave the ball away a lot in his own half and in dangerous positions too. Of course, Musa wasn't particularly brilliant and Jovic was kind of anonymous. But unfortunately, since we've bigged him up so much and he is an adult, I'm going to have to pick him.
He is an adult.
He is an adult. He can take it.
Yeah. No, you're not wrong. You're not wrong. Oh my god, I haven't done it yet. Okay. Okay, then I'll go Jovic because I think we all were hyping up big after, you know, he was our Semper Milan player of the match or player of the month, and Pulisic won the real one, so haha. But yeah, he didn't do anything. We all really wanted him, and then he really ghosted when he got that opportunity, and Pioli obviously took note because he didn't play a single minute against Roma, so.
Mm.
No, I'm going to go Pioli.
Yeah, I think that's totally fair. The manager should be included in this sometimes. And actually, I would agree with that as well, because you'd argue Jimenez having a bad game was partly because of the approach that we took. Yeah, really not good. Another trophy has vanished. And this one, I don't know if we're going to get a bracket like that again for a long time. You know, it so rarely happens. Our cup hoodoo continues as well. It's been over two decades since we won it now. I don't like the arrogance of Milan fans who say, no, it's never really been our thing. We prefer to focus on bigger things. Well, the bigger things are that we're 9 points back in the league. We got knocked out in the Champions League group stages, and we're probably not going to win the Europa League. So well done for focusing on stuff that's also gone to shit. Anyway, let's move on. Roma. This was a bit better. We need to preface this, I suppose, by saying that Roma are not in a good way. They have also had a lot of injuries, not quite as many as we had, but they came into to San Siro with a bit of a cobbled together lineup. I fancied us to win this regardless of what was going to happen in the cup game, because if we lose that cup game, we'll be fired up for this with our backs against the wall. And if we win it, we'd have the momentum kind of thing. Ultimately, this was a commanding win. Jose sat in the stands looking miserable. He's now unemployed. This was the final nail in his coffin. It was a bit better, wasn't it? First goal, I've totally gone blank on what... Oh, yeah, Yacine Adli buzzing. Yeah, buzzing for him. His first, it's the most memorable goal of the season, probably. And it just completely slipped my mind. Yeah, he took that really well.
Yes, I agree. He had that nice little cutback fake. And you could see in the replay, you could see Reinder celebrates before he even takes a shot. Like, they all just knew, like, this one's going in. And
it wouldn't be the same the other way around, because if Reinders is winding up a shot.
When Reinders takes a shot and goes, no. No, it was fantastic. That was a great way to start the game. Fantastic goal to get. I mean, couldn't be more happy for Adley, a guy who was told on day one that, you know, we're not going to play your position anymore. You're not in the plans. Start coming up with your own plans. And he said, you know, I'm going to adjust to whatever you need me to adjust. I want to be here and I'm going to make it work. Just watch. And yeah, he's made it work. You know, he hasn't had 9 out of 10 games consistently. He's had some bad ones, but this was certainly not one of those. I would say he was my man of the match. So spoiler alert there, but looked fantastic the entire time, both offensively and defensively. And then obviously scored the goal as well. So yeah, couldn't be more happy for Adley. Well deserved, and hopefully we see more of that from him. The second goal, I'm trying to think who was the Giroud
yeah, from Kier's assist.
Kier had the assist. Wow, I didn't realize that. Yeah, it was a typical. Yeah, typical Giroud. It wasn't. No, it was a kick, right? It wasn't a header.
What's that?
Was it a header or no? It was a kick, right? It was a ball.
Yeah, it was a kick. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think Kier crossed it in.
Kier's was a header back across goal for him to like thigh in or whatever. But yeah.
Yeah. So depending on how you want to look at it, that might have been Giroud's first open play goal scored with his foot in a very, very long time. If you're not counting volleys in that because it's still in the air and he didn't actually dribble himself, then okay, whatever. But I'm seeing some accounts keep a running tally of when he scores from open play or not without his head. It's kind of funny. But yeah, about time he got back in there. Ironic after everyone was begging for Jovic the last few games. And to be honest, I didn't think Giroud was even that good, but we can't beat this guy. He's on his third straight season of 10 plus goals in the league for us. Only Pato's done that in the past. So obviously big guy for us. And then his assist for that Teo goal. I don't know what was better. The fucking instant back heel, one of those damn flicks, like, law of averages, as you always say, Ollie, and eventually one's going to land. That was the one.
When that's the one, then you take the 9 that don't, you know, or exactly. 99. Also, I just checked the pictures. It was a header from Giroud. He stooped down and nutted it in from, like, waist high. You can't, as you say, you can't fucking beat this guy. You know, he's inevitable. Yeah, first Milan striker, well, first Milan player since Pato to score 10 plus league goals in 3 consecutive seasons. That's it. I mean, the flick was nice. And Teo rocketed that in off the crossbar when I thought he was going to finish the move by putting it into the second tier or something. But look, maybe it shows what a well rested Giroud can do. Maybe. I'm not going to pretend that he had a 10 out of 10 game overall. I think there were still a couple of moments where, you know, he leaves a bit to be desired because he is older. He is less athletic than he was before, but he still works incredibly hard and his positioning still seems to be there. He's got a sense for goal. And the flick, I suppose, is evidence of the understanding that these players, particularly from the Scudetto season, have built up with each other over time. And you can't just instantly replicate that. You know, like we saw it with RLC and Pulisic having a good link up and then he crossed a couple of times for Giroud and it's like, that's all there. It's all memory stuff, really. It does still exist, and it was good to see that left flank reunited as well with Teo and Liao, although Liao didn't do an awful lot, to be honest. But did you have flashbacks of last year when they scored to make it 2-1 from the penalty spot?
Yes, I did. And I do want to point out something about our penalties because it's 2 games in a row where we've conceded to a penalty. Mike has saved 11 of the 47 penalties he's faced in his career. That gives him a 23% save ratio, which is actually extremely good. Mm-hmm. The average penalty is saved 11% of the time. So in my head, when I looked that stat up, it was because I was going to say Mike's really bad at penalties, and then I found out he's significantly above average. They're just really hard to stop.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, I guess props to him, even though he didn't save this one. But, yeah,
full credit.
I got derailed. I was looking it up, and I said, oh, fuck.
I'm going to click into this now because I had the feeling that he hasn't saved many recently. So, like, he had a good run where he'd save, like, half of the penalties that he'd faced, and he hasn't saved any recently. I am just looking here at the trying to find the last one that he saved. It's quite a while ago. Anyway,
I think it's probably like a... when you save one, you have a little bit more confidence, and then once you break that, it's like, all right.
It was... Kvara in the Champions League last season.
Yeah, so not one this season. Which look, you can't expect goalkeepers to save penalties. I mean, it's a 0.92 xG for a reason, i.e., 92% of penalties are scored. But there are times when we could have really used a save from one. But
yeah,
here we are.
So he's conceded his last five this season.
Mm-hmm.
You look at a few of them. Dortmund, okay, we lost that 3-1. It wouldn't have made a difference. Roma, we won. It didn't matter. Inter, we lost 5-1. It wouldn't have made a difference. But there's a couple of them, like Atalanta, that would have kept us in it. And Udinese, we wouldn't have lost. So definitely some big moments. But again, he's well above average save. So it is what it is. But he's due a save. That's why during this game, I really thought he was going to save it. And then obviously he didn't. So...
It was a strange penalty as well. Like, I know Paredes, I was surprised that Paredes took it, first of all, because Lukaku was on the field, and I thought, I thought, yeah, this is written in the stars. But then when I saw Paredes on the ball, I was actually happier, because even if it goes in, you know, narrative is still intact. And he just sort of hammered it down the middle of the goal, and Maignan went early. So he wasn't a million miles away from it, but I think
there was a moment, though, where, and this just shows, like, how poor of a fit Lukaku is for Roma. You know, what he does best is his back to goal, creates that space, stick that fat old ass in the player's way and push him out, and then turn and he's open it, you know? And there was an opportunity where Lukaku was essentially on the penalty box with his back to goal, and Gabia was on his back. And there was, I can't remember who it was, but they were running straight at Lukaku, the Roma player with the ball. And Lukaku pushed the player off of him, and he was ready to turn, and he just opened, and he would have just first timed it, and it definitely would have been a goal. It would have been 1-1 at the time. And the player didn't pass to Lukaku. He just shot it sky high instead. And it just shows that, like, Lukaku is such an elite striker, and he's just being wasted at Roma right now. And I don't know. Maybe that's our guy next season. Who knows? Because he's on loan. Then they can't afford
again.
Him.
This again. Relentless. I think it didn't help that Dybala was injured again. Like, him and Dybala have actually had pretty good combination, but Dybala is just constantly injured now. He's missing, he's not really been out for months or anything, but he's missing, like, a couple of weeks every month, and that really hurts. And then, obviously, there was the whole thing in the build-up about, is it going to be Belotti alongside Lukaku? Probably not, because they're two... They're not similar, really, but, like, you know, are you going to play two natural centre forwards, or are you going to put someone next to him? In this case, it was El Shaarawy, who just couldn't get into the game, really. I thought that Lukaku would try and do things himself a bit more, knowing that he had either Kier or Gabir up against him. I thought that, as you said, he'd probably try get the ball with his back to goal and spin him himself and shoot rather than... But he doesn't look 100%, to be totally honest. You know, his first touch let him down on a couple of occasions. But I also think props to both centre-backs, in particular Gabir, because they were well up for the physical battle. And Gabir's, they won it, great. Ultimately. Yeah, he has. We ought to mention, like, the Atalanta game, he had to come off in the first half because Reinders pushed Deroon into him. And then he came
was our
off
best
like
player.
Yeah,
our
he was.
Defender, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I remember saying in the Roma game, like in the chat, I don't remember him being as quick as this. Because, like, he's not rapid. Like, he's not Tomori, he's not Kalulu. But when he got going, I was like, wow, yeah, he's got long limbs and he can cover some ground. And I think it's because we're so used to seeing Kier, and it's, he's just not there, really. Like, all respect to him for what he's trying to do at the age of 34, 35, I can't remember. But yeah, he doesn't have any athleticism, really.
I think Abi is just recognizing the opportunity he has in front of him right now. You know, a guy mm-hmm. who was not in the project that was sent out on loan because we had too many center backs. Well, fast forward 6 months and five center backs are out injured for lengthy periods of time and we don't have a choice. So we bring him back and he's going to start, right? He's going to get minutes. Mm-hmm. And you could either, you know, just be comfortable and do what you do because you know you're going to be playing. Or you could say, hey, I want to earn this spot legitimately and here's my opportunity. I'm going to play my best. And who knows, you know, maybe next season we're going into this Tomori Gabbia as our starting pair. Hopefully not. But if he's good enough.
Yeah, but you could also argue that knowing that the starting spot is his is going to bring pressure off of him and he's going to play more relaxed and smart.
Yeah, yeah. You do see it the other way around often, though, with I'd say Teo, you know, now that he has Alex Jimenez, but prior to Jimenez arriving, he didn't have any competition for left back. He had Florenzi, you know, a really old right back who was playing. So Teo could take it easy if he wanted to, and he was still going to get the starting nod every single day. Now he's got a little competition, and all of a sudden we're seeing goals like that again. So I don't know. I think competition's good, and I think – I don't know. I think without competition you could get comfortable, but you're right. You know, when you're coming back early like this, it definitely helps you with your confidence, knowing that you're going to be able to – make those mistakes and still get another game afterwards. So
yeah, I guess yeah, that's the thing. He's going to get a run of games, and the best thing he can do from his point of view is give the management a headache and be like, right, we need to keep this guy around rather mm-hmm. than let's sell him or let's loan him out again. You know, he'll be 24. He'll turn 24 this year. Maybe 25. I can't remember. But yeah, he's sort of getting to the this is what he is kind of thing rather than he's going to grow into this. So yeah, if he gives them a tough decision to make and they want to keep him around as like a fourth, fifth choice centre back again, if he wants that as well, then that means he's had a pretty good half season.
I could be wrong on this, but I'm pretty sure at the top of my head, La Liga is actually a more defensive league than Serie A. Is that correct, stat-wise?
In terms of like overall goals scored, I think average goals per game, Serie A is actually up there. It's like second mm-hmm. in the top five leagues.
Right.
It's bizarre. But then you see like Atalanta winning 5-0 last night again. It's mostly because like Inter have scored 50 goals in 20 games or something.
Yeah, some stupid.
I understand that. But tops and flops, and then we'll wrap up Roma. Top for me was Yacine Adli. He was played in a deeper midfield role, and I thought he really excelled there. Obviously, the headline will be his goal and his celebration, which was like an outpouring of emotion. You love to see that. But in general, I thought he played a really calm and good game, spraying the ball around, but wisely.
Yeah, I'm going to pick Adli as well, but I do want to give an honorable mention to Calabria. Yes, he gave away the penalty, and it was a fair penalty. You know, he absolutely got the challenge wrong. Huh. That's going to happen. It's just a shame it was inside the box, and it almost wasn't. It was right on the edge. I actually thought on the replay it wasn't, and then obviously it was. But, and then after that penalty, you know, there was some jackass in the crowd at the bar who just, anytime Calabria's face was on the screen, take Calabria off. One of our best defenders. No, and it goes to show how much he's the scapegoat. So yeah. Props to him for, you know, I don't know how much of that he pays attention to or hears, but. You know, props to him for going out there each week and still giving his best. And it's really good most of the time. So Calabria's definitely become a great player, but Adli is man of the match for me.
I'm going to go Teo because he scored a fucking rocket.
Can't argue.
Be our goal of the season. I'm going to give a little shout out like AJ did, but to Giroud, because like Pioli, somehow right before he loses his starting position, he always does enough to earn it back.
It's almost like he just needs a nap. That's all he needs.
Both of them. Yeah. I want to give a special mention as well to Gabbia for all the reasons that we just said, but like in particular in this Roma game, when Lukaku might have been their strong point, he basically nullified him. So well done to him. He's taken to it like a duck to water. Flop of the match for me. Tough one. I think Loftus-Cheek. I picked him last week, but Loftus-Cheek had a couple of frustrating moments. One where he should have hit it first time, and then he went down appealing for a penalty when, like, you're 6'4", a little scrape on your shin is... There was contact, but, like,
it was on the top of his foot.
I don't think it's going to be given, and I think he did it more because he knew he'd fucked up the opportunity. Pulisic was quiet, but I wouldn't go so far as to say that he was the flop of the match, which makes it quite tough to pick, but I'm going to have to go with Leao, unfortunately. Like, we come to expect more. We expect him to take another step forward after that great goal against Atalanta. And again, his decision-making left an awful lot to be desired. You could argue that he had a hand in some of our more dangerous moments, but once again, this is a player who's going to be judged on his output and on his end product, and it doesn't seem to be there on a consistent basis at the moment.
Leao has as many goals this season as CDK, so make of that what you will. But yeah, stats. Pulisic did have one opportunity, that header. I didn't think he had that type of vertical jump in him. Obviously, it missed, but I was just shocked.
LeBron James is soccer. You know, he's going
to
have
that. Yeah, he dunked it. He went to dunk, you know? No, but I think you're right on Loftus-Cheek. That's who I'm going to pick. There was an opportunity for Leao, I think, on a breakaway. And for whatever reason, Loftus-Cheek decided to drift into him and cut him off and steal the ball. Mm. And then he got it stolen from him, and it was just like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
And there was multiple moments in that game where everyone was just like, what the fuck is Loftus-Cheek doing? Like, take this guy off. He's not there right now. It seemed almost like his head was elsewhere. Like, he had something else on his mind that he was focusing on, and he just wasn't in the game. I don't know what it was, but yeah, this was not a good game from him.
I'm going to go Leao just because we expect so much more and he is not giving us anything.
Mm. Yeah, the Leao discourse on Twitter has become quite interesting and polarizing. You know, people saying, like, how has it got to a position where our 7 million, including bonuses, net per season player is getting, like, comfortably outperformed by other, well, by Pulisic mainly. So, yeah, I don't know, man. It's all getting a little bit wild on that front. So let's hope he answers as he always does with a good second half of the season. Udinese are our next opponents on Saturday night. Ominous. Ominous.
Yeah, we don't need this game anymore.
Yeah, I don't like playing Udinese at home or away. They seem to be difficult. And what I was about to say as well is that we owe them some praise, because in the last three games that they've played, they've taken points from Fiorentina and Bologna, and that is part of the reason that we have that 9-point lead to fifth place. However, that is also exactly why we are going to drop points in this fixture, because they seem to, for whatever reason, play up against the teams that are above them. They're a perennial pain in the ass. We drew their last... No. Did we lose their last season? 4-2?
No, we won the 4-2, but we've lost our last two matches against them.
Yeah,
so looking at it right now, in our last 6 matches against them, we have one win.
Mm.
Yeah. The 3 consecutive 1-1 draws, and then the 4-2 win, and then a 3-1 loss last season, and the 1-0 loss earlier this season. So we really got to get this one back.
Yeah, they beat us 3-1 last season.
The 3-1, yeah, that's what I was thinking of. That was when I think Zlatan came on and scored that penalty to make him the oldest Serie A goal scorer. Yep. And then there was a red card.
And that made it 1-1 or something?
Yeah, I think that was an equaliser, and then Beto scored. Now of Everton, of course. Don't like playing these lot. Is it the Dacia Arena now or something strange? Has not been too kind to us. I fear that we drop points in this one. However, you know, I want to be optimistic and look at it right. People are rightly saying that the Scudetto has gone. However, if you look at the fixture list, Inter and Juve play each other again pretty soon, I'm fairly sure. Inter have obviously got the Super Cup, which means that their game against Atalanta has to be penciled in for a little bit later. Inter also have Fiorentina and Roma coming up. I mean, look, you've got to expect them to keep rolling, because unfortunately they've been that good this season, and Juve obviously are 7 points above us, because they've also been pretty damn good. But if there is a window in the season where given we have Udinese, Bologna at home, Frosinone away, could that three league wins in a row become six wins? And then we're building up a real head of steam. You're looking at the gap, it's trimmed. This would be the window to try and take advantage of that, you know, with the Super Cup happening in Saudi Arabia and whatnot. But as I say, I'm not optimistic. I think we drop points in this. Udinese are just above the bottom three. After 20 games, they have won only two of them. One of them, of course, being against us. They've got 18 points. They've only scored 21 goals. And yeah, they've picked up a couple of positive results recently, as mentioned. But just generally speaking, they're not in a particularly brilliant place. They sacked Andrea Sottil, Gabriele Cioffi took over in October. And yeah, all points to us dropping points.
Yeah, I agree with everything you're saying, except I do think we turn it around. I just don't see a world where we lose to them three consecutive games. I think fair. It's probably this world. It just losing streaks come to an end eventually, right? Like they have to. There's no, they always do. So
I wish that applied to the derby.
God, that one's long, man.
Yeah, man.
But that one will go seven or eight more games.
Yeah.
But this one's going to end.
Peel is here.
Yeah. This one ends on Saturday. We're going to get the win. We're going to stop dropping these stupid points to these stupid teams, and we're going to extend that gap between us and the Europa League places because I said so, and that's that.
Hmm? Respect.
There we go. That's all we gotta do. Cut it short. AJ said so.
AJ said so.
I think we're gonna drop 1-1.
I'm going 1-1. Very
boring game.
Yeah, I don't know what the score is gonna be, but we come out on top. And Pulisic's gotta get a goal, man. It's been a little bit.
Oh yeah, let's crank up the pressure on our best performer of the season. No, I agree. Yeah, he does need a goal. I can see us equalizing late on in this through Jovic, and it kind of like bails us out of an embarrassing result. Obviously, it still wouldn't be great to drop points, but like as kind of mentioned last week, we're on this island at the moment where we've got 9 points to the team below us, and we've got 7 points to the team above us. So it's almost like the league isn't providing us any entertainment at the moment. The only way that we can sort of make it a thing again is by going on a big winning streak. So if that snaps at any point, then curtains, we might as well just focus on Europe because the teams below us are that shit and inconsistent that I honestly don't think top four's at risk. So that's where we are. I'll go 1-1 and we'll do a couple of questions and then wrap up.
I have a question for you guys.
Oh, yeah, go on.
If you have not, have you guys seen AC Milan on social media this morning at all?
Yeah.
No.
All right. Oliver, if you saw this, don't answer it. Oh. What player went from Parma to Roma to Milan?
Oh, well, I just pulled it up, so Ancelotti.
What?
I didn't know that was it. I thought you were...
Oh, we're back on
the... Did you see the shit?
Back on the quiz thing. I mean, I remember a time when our social media admins used to be really bizarre and post the weirdest captions, but now they seem to be pretty on it. Anyway, questions.
They hired like real social media people, not just like 90-year-old
interns.
Hired some yanks.
Abhijit Mohan asks, is it possible that we're actually in a glass half full situation? We look on course for another 75 plus point season. Any team that beats us to the title puts in a historic performance level that's hard to keep up, e.g. Napoli last season. Maybe we're actually a good team.
No. Because you get 75 points does not mean that you have a good season. Maybe in the past like 10 years when it was just Juve who was good, that meant you had a good season because no one else got that many.
Yeah, that's a fair point.
No, I disagree with that. I do think we're a good team, actually. You know, you look at Serie A, and we have the second most goals scored this season. We are in third with a 9-point gap below us. The problem is not the results. The results are fine. We're a solid team. There's obviously some silly games in there. You look at the Salernitana draw that shouldn't have been a draw, the Lecce draw that shouldn't have been a draw, the Napoli one, you know, that's 6 points we should have right there. That puts us in second if we were to get those at 48. You argue that the Juve game was bad luck and all of a sudden now we're tied for first. Like, you know, you could do your whatever math you want to do to make it better.
Do you know, there was a man once who said, winners celebrate, losers explain.
Yes, no, I know. It was Pioli. But what I'm saying is the performances are the issue, not the results. We have the team to do the job. So it to me, it's no question mark on the team and their quality. I think we have the right players to go the distance in both Serie A, the Cup, and arguably, you know, the Champions League or Europa League. I think we could make a run in either competition. It's our manager that's letting us down because the way we play is so bad, but yet we're still getting some results that you wouldn't anticipate from a team who plays the way that we do. You know, you look at how we score our goals, almost all counterattacks, and our open play creation goals is relegation level statistically in like the top seven leagues, where we're battling for last place on that, and yet we're top of the pile for counterattacks. So it shows the style of play isn't there, that's what's holding us back. If we had a coach who was able to put a system together that could get us open play goals the way Inzaghi has gotten out of Inter, then we'd be right up there, you know, challenging them, if not beating them. It's just, unfortunately, we have a guy who can't figure that out, and it is what it is. But yes, long story short, I do think we have a very good team. It's not a bad season. It's just, I don't want to say bad season. It's really not a bad season. If you were to tell me at the end of last year that we would be finishing comfortably third with a huge gap over Europa League, you know, I wouldn't say that's a bad result. It's just because we expected more, you know?
No, but I don't think that saying, oh, we're on target for 75 points, we're having a good season. I don't care if we have 40 points and finish in the top four.
That would be very hard to do. There'd have been some deductions if that had to... I won't mention points deductions. Maddie, it's probably sensitive for you at the moment. Yeah, like when I see people start saying, oh, look, we can finish third and 75 points, and you know, it's the FIFA empty trophy glitch thing for me. Like, that's not a I'm going to simplify this in a way that's going to make it sound like a hot take or that it's not considered at all. But when we won the Scudetto, the goalposts shifted. We then expected a trophy every season. We're going to go two seasons in a row trophyless. We amassed 86 points in the Scudetto season. I think we'll probably get around 75 this season. There's been a regression. He's had backing. We brought in 10 players in the summer. We're out of two competitions in January, and the league is a mirage at this point. I don't think we're going to win the title. So therefore, no, it's not been a good season. Like, not by any metric can you say that it's been a good season. That's just it. But if you want to see it as a positive season, which some people do, then fair enough. But I just think the bar has never been lower, if that's what you're saying. Edward O'Donnell asks, a common trend I'm seeing is that when we show intensity, it's when we're either behind or tied. But then when we're ahead, we take our foot off the gas. Is it a tactic from Pioli, or are the players getting nervous and it becomes a fear of failure?
That's a good question. I blame Pioli for that. Regardless of what it is, right? If it's a fear that they're going to fall behind, well, why do we have that fear? It's because we have fallen behind because of the tactics of Pioli. If it's because Pioli tells them to take it easy when we're ahead, then it's on Pioli again. So, I guess it all goes back to the maestro for us. So,
the mister.
Yeah.
There was an article that came out 2 months ago. So these numbers are out of date, but I don't think that they're skewed massively in any direction. But if you looked at only the first half of games for that season, we'd have been only 3 points behind Inter. Whereas it was in the second half of games, if you factor in the goals scored and against in the second half of games, that we'd have been on just 15 points or something. Look, it takes a bit more explaining than that, but the article is there. Essentially, yeah, we struggle massively in the second half of games. And is this what comes with an injury crisis? You know, you've got the starters working overtime because there's no depth to come in and take their place. The players get tired. You can't rotate as you want to do. We're quite an intensity-driven team when it comes to high recoveries and counterattacks. So maybe they just blow out of steam, or maybe Pioli has seen like the Napoli game and, you know, the others where we had a lead, and he is more conservative when we take the lead. You know, rather than going for a killer third goal, he saw like, right, okay, we can manage this game. And most of the time we do manage to do that, to be honest. It's not always pretty, but like Empoli, we saw them off. Roma, we saw them off even when they scored. Atalanta came from behind, though. So that's a big game where we didn't manage it correctly, and ultimately it's cost us in a competition where we've got to look to go on and win it. So, Yeah, I mean, the book starts with the coach, doesn't it? It's either instructions or it's mentality, and both of them fall back to him. Hassan Abu Jerry asks, would you take Benzema, basically, because he wants to get out of Saudi Arabia?
No, I wouldn't. Benzema has shown that when his head's not in it, his everything's not in it. So if he's not showing up to training right now, he's probably gaining weight. And at his age, it's going to be much harder to get it off. Mm. It's going to be much harder to get motivated for games, especially after he's already lost motivation. Do I think he would come? Yeah, probably. I don't think money's an issue anymore. You know, having that Saudi money for the last 6 months or however long it's been, he probably would. But then we're in the exact same position as we are now in another season. You know, he's 2 years younger than Giroud. Is mm-hmm. that what we're looking to replace our guy with? I mean, it doesn't make sense to me. I would rather go for someone else.
If I knew anything about Milan management, they will be all over Benzema.
Yeah, you're not wrong. Yeah, if it was Berlusconi, it would have happened already.
Yeah, it would have. Yeah, Galliani would have been flying out to Saudi Arabia with his yellow tie on. Would I take him? Look, there was a time when he was the best striker in the world, in my opinion. And he scored very, very important goals for Real Madrid in the six Champions Leagues that they won or whatever. No, not anymore. If we're going to sign a striker, it has to be someone who is the right profile for the future and not somebody in their 30s. The final one before we wrap up, and you can keep your answer short for this. Casey Caudray asks about Adli. Where do you see his ceiling? And is he getting better with every start? Or do you think that he might just get benched as soon as Bennacer returns?
Yeah, I do. I think Bennacer is going to take the spot back. It's not a slight on Adli. I do think he could grow into his role and you know, be that first guy off the bench or a starter for half the games. The ultimate goal in every team should be to have two world-class level starting 11s that you could rotate interchangeably all players. So no one should have to start every single game unless you have a Messi or Ronaldo caliber guy up front, you know, or your goalkeeper, obviously. But other than that, you should be able to rotate your players without any loss in quality. So if Adli is that guy, then great. But I do think Bennacer should be the starter.
Same. I do like Adli, though. I hope he understands that.
Obviously, Bennacer and Chukwueze are at AFCON. Just a brief note on that. Bennacer started for Algeria yesterday, but they were awful against Angola, and they drew 1-1. And he came off in the second half, but he did not get good ratings from the press. And Chukwueze didn't start for Nigeria. He came off the bench, and yeah, clearly he's not in favour with the coach at the moment either. So because they're dropping points and stuff, maybe we get them back earlier, but it's more than likely that they win and go deep in the tournament. Of
Nigeria's
course,
got a pretty stacked squad, though.
Yeah, their forward group is serious. But they sent,
the way
like,
I look at it is I'd rather Nigeria go all the way and Algeria not go anywhere, because then we get Bennacer back. But if Nigeria go all the way, Chukwueze is not a starter for us, but it keeps Osimhen away from Napoli. So
yeah, fair point. They sent Boniface home with like a two-month injury, who by a Leverkusen striker. And then there was another player, Ndidi, I think, as well, has been sent home early. So, like, we need to just be... Because they sent Chukwueze home with a month-long injury last time, you know, in the last international break, or maybe two ago. But, yeah, we need to be careful with those Nigerian medical staff. On Adli, though, yeah, I think Benitez got the starting spot. One thing that has always baffled me, obviously, he played a deeper role in preseason. He looked pretty good. He's looked okay playing it so far in competitive games this season without setting the world alight, barring that Roma game. But I look at him and I see a natural box-to-box player there. So why can't he become part of those rotations? You know, rather than pinning everything on him being a number six or being in the double pivot, why can't we say, all right, Loftus-Cheek probably can't start two or three games in a row, but we can play someone who can create and can get in and around the edge of the box. And I'm not just saying that because he took a goal really well against Roma. I actually think he's good at progressing the ball and he's confident with the ball at his feet. So we should probably, you know, try and lean into that a little bit, because if there's one area that he lacks, it's his defensive intensity and his recovery speed. And when he gets spun, you know, that kind of thing. We play him as a six, that kind of thing is going to be exposed week in, week out, especially against good opponents. But if you're playing box to box, you're probably freeing him up a bit to do the things that he does well. So why that's never been considered, I don't know, to be honest. But that's why I'm not the head coach of Milan. We will wrap it up there, boys. been a great episode. Thank you to everybody for watching. Drop us a comment with anything that you thought on what we said. As I know you all do, you've all got opinions on what we say. Some more positive than others, and yeah. I've been your host, Ollie Fisher. Find me on Twitter at Ollie Fisher. AJ, cheers for joining.
Yep, see you guys next time.
Maddie. Catch you next time.
Gol! Ancora Teo! È una meraviglia! Il gol di Teo Hernandez! Da un'area all'altra! È una meraviglia! Senti il mio cuore!